So glad you're here for the latest episode of the Broadway Show Uncut. Well, the 80s come alive on this episode of the podcast. Boy George coming to the Moulin Rouge, bringing a little culture to the club as Harold Zidler. Paul Wontorek has the interview with Boy George coming up in just a few. But first, they say the heart of rock and roll is still beating. And from what Broadway says, we believe it. Not one, but two Broadway shows, now featuring the music of Huey Lewis in the news. Of course, you'll hear Huey in Back to the Future, the musical. But now comes the heart of rock and roll. It's a musical based on the music of Huey Lewis in the news. I had a chance to catch up with the 80s rock legend.
Nice to see you.
Nice to see you.
Let's jump in and talk about the idea for the heart of rock and roll. Where did it come from?
Well, actually, it's my neighbor's son-in-law. It works for Imagine Entertainment. And my neighbor is a big musical theater buff. And we were over there for dinner. And he said to his son-in-law, you should do a musical on Huey's music. And so he asked, he said, that's a good idea. What do you think, Huey? I said, well, the proof's in the pudding. You need a script. So they went away with his pal John Abrams, Tyler Mitchell, and they wrote the first draft, and it was actually very good.
So what is it about? Talk a little bit about that. What is it about?
It's about a kid who's in a rock band. It's really a love story, but it's about a kid who's in a rock band and can't make it for some reason. They can't get signed. So he quits in frustration, gets a straight job as for a corrugated company, goes from a rock star to a box star. And then he falls in love with the boss's daughter, and he's kind of moving up the company. And then simultaneously, his old band gets the break they've been looking for. They get the tour and the album, they got an album deal. And so they go to him and they say, hey, come on, this is our dream. You want to do this? And he goes, yeah. And then that's the first act. In the second act, he tries to do both things.
Uh-oh.
And it gets a little squirrely. And I won't tell you the ending,
okay.
But that's kind of what it's about.
Is there any of you in this musical, part of your story?
Well, all of our music, all the music is Huey Lewis and his music. But no, it's an original. It's not about me. There's some stuff because all the music is ours. So there's a certain personality to that I think that Bobby and Cassandra sort of adhere to. But it's not at all about us. No.
I saw you on stage with Back to the Future talking about, you know, giving due to the actors that were up there and how they're triple threats and, you know, what they do each and every night.
Yeah.
It looked like you were having a great time. What does musical theater mean to you?
Well, it's I always say that because it's the most demanding, I think it's the most rewarding form of artistic expression. I mean, and not only that, but it's collaborative. It's wonderfully collaborative. Sometimes frustratingly collaborative, but it's collaborative and it must be synergistic.
Yeah.
The sum has got to be greater than the parts. It's not enough to be good in a show. You need to make everybody else good as well. And so it's really a wonderful thing when it all kind of comes together and everybody's sort of better than they ever have been, you know?
There is something about live theater that you just feel as an audience, you've almost got a part in it as a character because you're just feeling every bit of that energy.
I really don't think there's anything like live musical theater. I really think it's so rewarding for performers and the audience. It's kind of a funny story. My neighbor invited me to go see Mamma Mia when it first came out. It's in the 80s. And I went to see, I thought, I'm a rocker, you know. But I went to see Mamma Mia and I was knocked out. I just loved it. And I thought, whoa, that's interesting. And then in 2006, they asked me if I was interested in playing Billy Flynn in the musical Chicago, and I thought, well, I don't think I can do that. But my son was going to NYU at the time, and I was going to visit him anyway. So I said, well, give me a couple tickets, and we'll go see the show, and you know, then I'll tell you. And I went to see the show, loved the show, knocked out, and I even thought to myself, you know, I could almost do that, and I'm an idiot if I don't try. So, and my son said, yeah, I think you're right. So I went in, I was Billy Flynn number 31. I think they should have numbers on the tuxedos, but I fell in love with all that is Broadway. And mostly that's the people. And the people are, you know, smart, funny, got a lot of heart, self-effacing, and just fun to work with.
So for you to be such a part of this now, I know you said that musical theater has been your salvation in so many ways in the past several years. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, yeah, I lost my hearing. I lost my right ear 35 years ago. I have a thing called Meniere's disease that they don't really understand, and my hearing's affected rather seriously. I lost my left ear like 6 years ago, and now I can't hear music. I can't hear pitch. I can't perform any of that stuff. So that was a very depressing 6 months. I pretty much laid in bed. But you got to get up. You got to get on with things. And this musical has been a salvation for me in terms of creativity and enabled me to be involved, be busy, and be creative.
I know you credit your children with helping you out during that very difficult time. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, well, my kids wouldn't let me mope, for too long. After a while, they said, come on, Dad, you got to get with it. So, the Zen Buddhists say you need three things in life, something to love, something to hope for, and something to do. And I think that's really true. And the hope for and to do are really this musical.
I love it. People that grew up with, I'm one that grew up with your music and MTV days and here, you were on all the time in the videos and singing along in high school and college. I'm sure there's going to be a lot of people with a lot of memories, but also to see the generations that have followed that, that's got to be pretty special.
Yeah. And it's set in the 80s, the show, and it's a remarkable how different the 80s were than now. I mean, when you think about it, we had no internet, you had no cell phones, and it was an audio world.
We listened to Huey Lewis.
Yeah.
That's what we did.
Audio was a much bigger deal. There wasn't any YouTube, there wasn't any Instagram, Facebook, none of that. And so music was a much larger part of our lives. And it wasn't quite as segregated as it is today. Where top 40, you can argue, was kind of restrictive, and it's an editing process. Mm-hmm. But we all it was an editing process that we all strive for, so that if you wanted to hear a Huey Lewis in the News tune, you also heard a Commodore song and a Garth Brooks song.
Yep.
So it was wonderfully diverse that way.
And it was radio too. So you'd get in your car or you'd turn on the radio and you knew what was going on. You knew who was. It was very different time.
Yeah, I mean, it was absolutely radio. You think about early 80s, there were no jam bands. There was no internet. There was only one avenue to success if you were a musician and wanted to play your own music, and that was a hit record, a hit top 40 record.
When you go back at that time and look at it and think of, what that took, do you remember when your first hit record, where you were,
Oh, yeah.
Was it the surprise?
It was a big deal, because we knew we needed a hit or we couldn't exist. And so we produced the record ourselves, our sports record, because I knew we'd have to make commercial choices, and I wanted those choices to be ours so that we could live with them. And I asked my pal Mutt Langer, who's a producer, if he had any. Since we produced the record, my theory was we'll do the best 8 songs we can write and the best 2 we can find. And I called Mutt Langer and said, Mutt, you got any songs for us? And he sent me We Both Believe in Love, which I rewrote and was our first hit.
Is there one that you have a particular affinity to? Is there something that's a favorite for you, song, moment?
Well, we produced our records ourselves, so you're not allowed to play favorites.
Okay.
Do you know what I mean?
Like children? It's
a bad notion. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
I often think about it, though, when I think about Huey Lewis. I guess I always thought of, rock and roll and fun. Like, that's if you had to give an adjective now, looking back. Is that how it felt then? I'm sure it was a lot of pressure, and I'm sure you were always looking for the next, next hit, next moment, and audience, but is that what you wanted to represent?
Well, yeah, I mean, yes. Although I don't think that's any sort of a light thing. I mean, fun. Yeah, I mean, our stuff is
happy.
Happy. Make people happy. To cheer people up, as it were. I mean, not that all of our stuff is like that.
Sure.
We had some, Walking on a Thin Line and Forest for the Trees. Some other songs that explored other stuff. But by and large, we're trying to make cheer people up. Lord knows the world is a tough enough place as it is. Why not cheer people up?
So talk a little bit about the production and the part that you play in it. Are you there for rehearsals? And are you are you closely aligned with going through the script or giving suggestions?
Well, I mean, to start with, I had very little to do with this thing. I mean, the story is by Tyler Mitchell and John Abrams, and John Abrams is a writer. But they're good friends of mine, and they wanted to use the music. And of course, they had to make me a producer, so because I have to look after the music, And the little puzzle that we did was, the songs need to push the story forward,
sure.
And that's very difficult. Tyler did a wonderful job of laying out the songs around stuff, but we still had to tweak them and rewrite them a little bit in certain ways. And so, I needed to be involved with that because there are songs.
Yep.
And okay, I'm and so on. So they had to make me a producer. And now that I'm a producer,
it's a
wonderfully clever. Hey, I got some script ideas too, So and this was years ago. So we've been working on this for a long, long time.
They gave you the title, so you get to use the title however you want.
Yep.
How many songs are in the musical? How many are songs?
I'm not positive. I think it's like 23 songs.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Something
wonderful.
Like that.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Not at all.
Congratulations. It's very exciting.
I hope you enjoy the show.
I know I will.
Okay.
I know I will.
All right, thanks.
And now here's Paul Wontorek's interview with Boy George.
Thank you so much for being here, George.
Thank you.
Back on Broadway. I didn't know if I'd get to see you back on Broadway. I hoped.
I know. When I was doing Taboo, I used to have this joke when I was dressed as Lee, I used to say, everyone said I should be off Broadway. Trust me, I'm off it now. Because we had such a, what's the word? Tumultuous. That's what, it was extreme.
Yes.
Taboo on Broadway was sort of an explosion of things that happened. And it was quick and, looking back, I probably wouldn't change any of it. Because it was a moment. The whole thing was such a moment. And so different here now. Broadway is different. I mean, listen, I know that there are still critics in the world, but it's not the same as it was. People tend to kind of make up their own minds about what they want to see, despite what people say, And plus, I feel like now we have access to each other in a way we never had before through the internet and through our iPhones. Mm-hmm. Who do you listen to now? Mm. Someone who says you're amazing or someone says you're rubbish and you bring in the show. So there are all those people, and there's people that say such beautiful things about you, and then people that say such awful things. And so where do you go? Well, who's right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think the audience is right.
Mm-hmm.
It's always the audience. Like they stand up at the end and go crazy. You've done a good show. There's always going to be one person. So it's about learning to. I mean, obviously, I wasn't the person I am now when I did Broadway with Taboo.
Yeah,
I was pretending to be the person I am now.
Yeah, I read your book. I got some behind the scenes stories. You were having fun behind the scenes while you were doing Taboo.
I was having fun.
Yeah.
And, it was, I think staying in New York after Taboo was a mistake, but, I didn't really want to go home. I was like having fun here. And, it ended as it ended, but it's great to be back here. I've been to New York many times since then, but.
You haven't called.
I haven't, sorry, but I heard you're married, so I was like, I'm not really. But being here, with this sort of clarity is a very different experience. Being anywhere with this clarity is a big experience. I feel like, I've come here to enjoy it, which is different to Taboo, because it was, Taboo, we were trying to break something, which is always much harder.
Mm-hmm.
And, I'm walking into this big slapping, screaming show that's working already.
Yeah.
So that's a nice security.
I feel like jumping into something like Moulin Rouge, the only thing I can think is it's like you're running alongside this fabulous glitter train, running alongside of it, and you have to just jump on it. I just can't imagine what it's like for you to like enter that.
Well, I did Panto in England before which was a really good move because it got me ready for some of what I'm doing in Moulin Rouge. Mm-hmm. It was like taking driving lessons. Actually, it was really smart. And I really enjoyed it, actually. Panto was a real revelation to me in terms of playing a baddie and having the kids booing me. That was amazing. It was so invigorating. Who knew being booed would be so much fun? And then coming here, the workload is obviously much bigger. It's a bigger part. it's more of a talking role than a singing role. It's not really about singing, it's about talking. And I just fancied the challenge. I fancied, you know, it's probably something I wouldn't have said yes to 10 years ago or 20 years ago, but, you know, I'm kind of in this, I want to do some more acting. I'd like to be in a film. I'd like to do everything, really, you know. Have my own dessert topping, you know, own a skyscraper, all of it, you know. I just feel like I like being in the game of what I do. You know, I feel like I find working relaxing. I find like what I do relaxing. So I'm not someone who ever wants to get through something. That's not my mission. I'm not one of these, oh, we've got four shows in the weekend, like rolling my eyes. I might have been 20 years ago, but now I'm like, okay, well, you know, let's get ready. You know, get ready for it. And each night is a, each show is a opening night in a way. For me particularly, because I'm learning a lot about what's capable, what's possible as a performer. You know, it's a different world for me. But I'm enjoying him. I'm really enjoying him more and more every night, you know.
What about the grind of eight shows a week? And
again, you know, you can choose to moan about it or you can just say, well, that's what it is and that's what I agreed to do. So fix your head into that, get on with it. And actually, it's not helpful to moan. It's not helpful when you start dragging your feet through something. It just wears you down. So I don't even like it when people say you look tired. Because I'm like, it's very rude, isn't it? It's like throwing a big wet blanket on someone. It's like, I'm not tired, thanks. Just got no eyebrows on, you know. So generally, yeah, I feel like I try to stay away from the sort of negativity of like, you know, eight shows. It's like, well, eight shows means you're going to get better at what you're doing.
When I heard you were joining this show, I was like, brilliant. This is brilliant, brilliant casting. It's just, it felt perfect. Knowing the show, knowing the role of Zidler, it's such a great character, like so like good guy, bad guy, like he's sort of all over the place. It felt like a perfect match. And also it's a show of excess. You've had a lot of moments of excess in your career.
It's funny because as a person I'm much more zen than I've ever been, you know. I meditate every day, always, no matter what. I actually really enjoy doing nothing, which is something that's a bit of a revelation to me, you know. I like working. I find working relaxing. I find being engaged mentally relaxing. I don't find the schedule difficult, but I also really like to kind of have downtime where I'm just not thinking about much at all. You know, just
so when
really...
So when you ramp up and get to the Al Hirschfeld Theater, it must feel like that's sort of the moment.
I'm playing a lot of techno in my dressing room to get myself some proper gabba.
Techno.
Proper gabba, like really fast. And yeah, just, you know, I talk to myself a lot anyway. You know, I'm I do this thing called EFT, which is emotional freedom tapping, which is, you know, you can tap anywhere on your, just watching TV, on a flight, backstage. You know, just tell yourself things are going to be great.
What is that? So how long have you been doing that?
I've been doing it for years. In the last year, I've really ramped it up a lot, you know, where I literally, before I go to sleep, I kind of, you know, say, oh, tomorrow's going to be great. You know, especially if I know what's going to happen, you know. I try to prepare myself more because I have definitely been a stumbler into person in my life where I've turned up to things unprepared. And one of the great things about Moulin Rouge is there's a lot of preparation. You know, I got into the script in London before I came here on my own. I just learned as much of it as I could. So I arrived with the first half pretty much under my belt. And then there was just stuff to learn. It was more about movement. And yeah, you know, you go from sort of being like, oh my God, this is really stressful. Where have I got to be? To like, this is great. You know, I've got a couple of scenes where I sit off stage and, you know, I get to soak it up. And yeah, I'm actually on the stairwell, you know, saying, I love this role.
Yeah.
You know, I really love playing this character. And, you know, it's important to sort of remind yourself that it's fun, you know? And yeah, I just wanted to have a really special time here in New York. I wanted it to be noticeably special. I didn't want it just come and like get through it.
Well, you know. And you know, fans like me, I want you to have a special time. You know, like we have such a connection to someone like you. I've known you forever, and you're such an icon, and people just always kind of want you to do well. What is it like when you meet people like me or the members of the company. I mean, your boy George, I think you know that. So you walk into a room with a lot of history, and does that just very secondhand?
I don't think about it a lot, you know, because I don't know, I can't really.
Yeah.
Because you can never really know what other people think of you anyway.
Right.
All you can really do is be as well behaved as you can. You know, be nice, be charming, be professional, turn up, you know, listen. That's the key thing.
Listening, yeah.
Yeah, because, you know, in rock and roll, I don't listen. Because I know what I'm doing. I don't need your advice. I don't mean that in a, you know, I just don't, you know, because I also think that I understand that everything exists already. There's nothing to invent or create except what you're going to do with what's there. You know, the elements are all there, you know, in terms of a sort of, you know, well-stocked pantry, whether it's musical pantry or a design pantry or an art pantry, it's all there. It's what you do with it as an individual that makes it unique. But it's, you know, as I say, as I've got older, I've sort of got less and less concerned about being right or, or, you know, even songwriting, sort of thinking like, oh, I have to have a reason to write it. I don't, actually. One of the great things about technology is you can Google stuff now.
Right.
So you can really get into information, and all smart people, you know, Yoji Yamamoto, Bowie, they all said it. Copy, listen, watch, absorb, and then make it your own somehow. And the fun bit is trying, you know, and with a role like Ziedler, it's, you know, the show's written, so there's nothing to change, but you can affect the emphasis in places where, you know, and I watched Eric a lot before I went into the RAW. I watched him.
Eric Anderson.
Yeah, and I watched him, and I loved some of the things he did, and I sped up some stuff because of him. And, you know, it's about observing and, you know, and then trying to add who you think you are as that character into it. I've been really, really enjoying it.
Is it exhausting to be ahead of everybody, ahead of the, I mean, look at your, I mean, look at all the things you've been ahead of the world in so many ways. Even Taboo, speaking of Broadway, felt very ahead of its time. I feel like you were having conversations and then the world is catching up. Isn't that exhausting?
No, I think it's, I enjoy it more now. I think that as I get, I think as I get older, I kind of feel like there's less to explain. There's more to observe, you know, in the world. There's more things to look at if you really want to take time. And I think one of the great things about the pandemic, if there was anything great, was the reconnection to nature again. Because suddenly you were in a lot, hanging out with a lot of trees. And, you know, I was out there, you know, in nature and just really sort of, you know, sitting around going, wow, man, trees are amazing. You know, and just sort of really soaking up that nothingness, you know, and also kind of, you know, in the beginning of the pandemic, I didn't realize what was happening. I didn't realize that I wasn't going to work for like 2 years. And, you know, that was hard. But at the same time, there was a lot of gifts from it as well, you know, detox from so many things, you know, and there was communication things that happened that were beautiful. I was doing these insane raves. I was doing these like virtual raves, like DJing, and it was like people all over the world in their flats, and we were like chatting, and it was just, you know, if you thought about it now, you'd be like, it's insane, but it was happening.
Yeah.
And I was like doing these like mad Zoom calls with people I'd never met, just like, right, here's a number, clicking. You know, obviously some of it, I had to stop it in the end because people were out of control, but it was a really interesting time because it was a, you know, if you were lucky enough to be able to survive it without too much hardship, which I was, you know, there was a lot of space to do new things. And I just got back into writing in a big way. I got back into kind of trying to understand why I do what I do, not in a pretentious way, but just, you know, learning to get out of my own way creatively is has been a big thing in the last few years. And just realizing that everything exists. So there's more to take. Once you realize it's all there, you don't got to search for it anymore. You haven't got to have writer's block, because writer's block then becomes a choice, or that you're not doing enough to encourage yourself to be creative. So, you know, I'm really fascinated with the, you know, imagination, what you can do with your own mind, you know, and part of that is why I'm having such a great time on this show, because I'm tapping it out. You know, more sass, more joy, more laughter, more love. That's my mantra. On stage, when I'm sitting around to go on, I'm like, you know, this is, he's a sassy character, so let's sass it up. Let's, like, you know, let's not, you know, you don't ever want a moment to, it's quite, I've got some great scenes in that show. They're really chunky and they're quite funny, and then there's some sad bits. I get to play a lot of
It's sad
corners, you know, I can be nasty as well, so it's just a pleasure to do it, you know.
Yeah. So it seems like you're actually even maybe more comfortable with the love, not only that you're giving, but receiving from.
Yeah, when this is different to a rock and roll show, because in a rock and roll show, I really engage with the audience. I'm in the audience. Yeah. I talk to them. It's very friendly. But with this, it's, you have to almost, you know, the audience is there and you know you're there to entertain the audience, but you can't engage with
them. I'm a character.
You can't engage with the audience, but you can, you know, so it's, after a while, you know they're there, but they stop being such a big presence, you know? And that gives you more freedom to kind of play around with, you know, do you know what I mean? The character and, you know, it's a month. I mean, I've got a long way to go in terms of what I'm going to do with him and where we can go. It'd be, you know.
But you're giving, there's a lot of songs in Moulin Rouge, a lot.
There is, yeah. And I only sing like two bits,
There's a couple of Culture Club songs as well now.
Yeah, there's Karma Chameleon, a little bit of Do You Really Want to Hurt Me, and a little bit of I'll Tumble For You.
Gotta give them a little.
Yeah, people love it. And, you know, it wouldn't have been something I would have suggested because, you know, whatever, nostalgia. But then the show's full of everything.
Yeah.
So it kind of makes sense.
Yeah.
And it also shows you how everything is so connected. I mean, that's the point I'm making. That's one of the interesting things about Moulin Rouge is that theatrical, what does it mean anyway, a theatrical song or a pop song, they're all the same. It's pitch and rhythm, it's words, it's melodies, it's a story. And what you start to realize is actually it's, you know, I've started to use more musical theater type writing in my work in the last few years. I always loved it, you know, but I never thought about playing around with it.
Right.
Bowie was doing that a lot. You know, Bowie was using a lot of sort of musical theater, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And that kind of made me think, oh, maybe I should just include it. You know, I have a song, I've got this song called So Broadway. I'll have to send it to you. We wrote it because, you know, everyone uses that as a diss. It's So Broadway. And I went to see a friend of mine performing in London. And my friend has said, oh, I said, what's she like? And she said, she's got a really beautiful voice, but she's very Broadway. And it sounded like a condemnation, you know.
Yeah, American Idol used it.
And then I was like, oh, she's really good. And then I was like, actually, I haven't done anything with anyone like this before. I haven't done any songs or whatever. So when I wrote the song called So Broadway, So Broadway, So Broadway, why has no one said it before? So Broadway, but like, it as not as a diss.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? As a kind of, no, it's cool because
so that's a song?
Yeah.
So Broadway?
Actually, yeah, it's actually So Broadway.
Oh, So Broadway.
Yeah, I got to send it to you. It's good. And I don't know what I'm going to use it for.
You could do an album called So Broadway.
You know, it could be like, write the musical the other way around, you know, write the songs first. I don't know. I don't know. But, you know, I've definitely got excited about doing Taboo again. That's something I'm in discussion with at the moment. And Taboo had a really interesting life in America because it came as sort of cult musical.
Yes.
No one really knew about it, but everyone knew about it. And our little appearance in the Broadway movie, you know, that movie that was made, that we were in that seemed to kind of create this legend of Taboo.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of the things I really would love to do is bring it back and to, you know, kind of make it, you know, make it brighter in some places and darker in some places as well, a bit more real. But I've also
You have to bring it back. I have to tell you on camera, I'm obsessed with, you don't know how often I listened. And the minute I can't look at your face without thinking, you've got it wrong. You've got it right. You've got a lot to learn. Like literally, this like runs through my head. I love this show and it was so ahead of its time and it's so beautiful and you have to bring it back.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And actually I get so many moments in the theater where I get these deja vu running up the stairs thinking, oh my God, I did this before in Taboo, you know, with the, it's not so many stairs in this show, but in, you know, these little beautiful green Cuban heels. And yeah, no, it's been good. And it's nice to be here having a very different experience with Broadway.
Yeah.
You know, this is a kind of very fulfilling experience. Yes. It's not, there's no stress. You know, it's every time we sell out, I'm like, I'm so excited, you know, because that's what we're here. We're here to create as much fuss as we can.
And, so you don't miss the urinals.
No. No, but one of the things we
you
talked,
performed with your
no, but one of the things we talked about, funny enough, in the new version of Taboo, we talked about having the toilet of Taboo as a kind of TARDIS. You know, with nightclubs in the 80s, everyone lived in the toilet. You had sex in there, you did your makeup in there, you did naughty things in there, you phoned people, or you just gossiped. The loos were almost like a sort of, you know, they were like the central place. So it could be quite funny, and it's just a great way to transition things, you know. Mm-hmm. So yeah, no, I'm definitely excited about doing, maybe writing another musical, you know. Maybe, you know, I've got some mad ideas, you know.
That.
And doing Mulan, when you see how it's structured, you know, and I tend to watch things more now. I'm definitely more observant when I do things now. So the detail doesn't go past me, you know, which it used to before, I think. That's more about mindfulness. And
I think, in fact, if you look at what's happening on Broadway, Broadway's probably caught up to you and your energy. So I feel like you're right. I'm sure you are inspired by when you see what people want to see. And then,
yeah, and as I say, you know, there's so many great stories to tell, and you know, I'm kind of always, because I write so much, you know, I'm always writing songs. I've got several things out right now. I've got, you know, I've got a song that's number one in Singapore and Greece. No one's ever heard of it, called Religion. I've got another song with Ariana DeBose in the English chart,
of course.
And two other songs in the Legacy chart. So I just keep putting stuff out.
Yeah.
I decided a few years ago that I was just going to keep making music and not necessarily always promote it.
Uh-huh.
The idea of it finding its own feet, for whatever reason, is quite exciting to me because, as I say, the industry that I was in doesn't exist. So, like, let's do other things.
Yeah,
I feel like I want to do other
stuff.
Own thing
now.
Yeah,
people will find it.
Yeah, if they want to, and if they don't, hardcore fans know everything.
Yeah,
and then people that don't. You know, they're surprised that you're still making, but people always ask me that.
Yeah.
You still make music? I'm like, oh my God, every day.
Google me. Find my music. You can find my music.
Google, go on Spotify, I'm everywhere.
Yes, yes, absolutely. Well, I just want to thank you for being you, honestly. My whole life, it's such an inspiration. And I know you hear it all the time, but
that's
I like
nice
to tell
though.
People in person. You really taught a lot of, you taught the world how to be comfortable being yourself, honestly. I mean, it's true. I know you're sick of hearing it, but
no, it's not that. It's just, it's hard for me to kind of even think like that. But
yeah,
I think I feel like, you know, I was obviously when I was 19, I didn't care what people thought because I was 19, and I was like, who cares what do they think?
Right.
You know, what's it got to do with them? You know. Mm-hmm. And then of course you get famous, and that adds another layer of anxiety to who you are. Or it adds another narrative that people will latch onto, and then, you know, you have your car crashes and then you have your triumphs. But it's, I think Bowie said that when you get older, you become the person you're meant to be. Mm. So if you're a nasty piece of work, you're only going to get worse, aren't you? You know, and I think if you're nice, you go back to kind of, I think you find your sense of humor. Mm. I think that's the key to all things is, you know, as you get older, you sort of, that, you know, the Stoics talk about not having an opinion. And it's such a rare thing to sort of experience something and go, I had a really nice time. Do I need to pull it apart? Do I need to gossip about it? You know, gossip's good, of course. Mm-hmm. Let's not really gossip because you get great lyrics from gossip.
What's your number one goal for the next couple of months on Broadway?
Well, the first month I've been very focused on the show and I haven't seen anyone. Uh-huh. So lots of people have texted me saying, we never see you. And now I'm like, now I'm in the show. I kind of got it now. I feel like we've done a month. I think I've got it. There's a few little corners to clean up, but overall I think I've got it. The flow of it's good. So now I can start relaxing a bit. I've been turning up a bit later to the theater, not because I don't want to be there, but just to take some of the, you know, I have to be there half an hour before I put the wig on, and then I I'm in it, and I, you know, I just really try to enjoy it.
Yeah.
I don't ever want to look like I'm bored, you know, because I'm not. Who knows what I'll do after this? You know, I've been offered some interesting acting things, so.
Fabulous.
I'd like to do something serious, you know.
Uh-huh.
Maybe some Shakespeare.
Oh, what? Shakespeare?
Now is the winter of our disco tent made glorious summer by some son of a bitch.
Fabulous. Okay.
The gay Shakespeare.
That's all for this week's All 80s episode of the podcast. Until next time, I'm Tamsin Fidel, and this is The Broadway Show Uncut.